Proverbs chapter 29. Verse 1. He that being often reproved hardeneth his neck shall suddenly be destroyed, and that without remedy. It's interesting because we were on Tuesday morning. We were talking about Dan had this. No, was it Tuesday morning? But anyway, Dan Lawson was asking me about verses about. He was looking for a verse about stiff-necked people, and so we kind of looked up some verses and stuff for him, and I did a real quick little thing on the. I'm just curious. I'm curious. I'm a language guy. You know that. And so I was looking at the Hebrew words, you know, for stiff-necked in the Old Testament stuff. And then it just blew me away that this afternoon when I was working on this, it says hardeneth his neck. It's that stiffens his neck. It's the same two words as being stiff-necked here. So he that being often reproved hardeneth his neck. The person who responds to reproof, to criticism, to rebuke, the person that responds to criticism by stiffening their neck and by saying, "Whoa, I'm not going to do that," shall suddenly be destroyed, and that without remedy. A couple other translations. For people who hate discipline and only get more stubborn, there will come a day when life tumbles in and they break, but by then it will be too late to help them. Proverbs 29, New Living Translation says, whoever stubbornly refuses to accept criticism will suddenly be broken beyond repair. There was this guy who owned a very fast motorcycle, and it was not Ray. And it wasn't your husband, Connie. But we should tell him this story. His friends would always tell him because he only had one good eye. The other eye was a glass eye. They always told him that if he didn't slow down when he rides his motorcycle, he would someday be involved in a serious accident. But the friend's warning went to no avail. One day he got into a terrible accident out on a lonely, rarely used stretch of highway. The driver and his passenger were both eye doctors. There was no one around when the accident happened, so one turned to the other and said, "He just seems knocked out cold." They checked the cyclist over, and he seemed all right, except he had excessive damage to his eye. The driver then said to his friend, "Well, why don't we take him back to our eye clinic, fix his eye, and then put him and the motorcycle back where the accident happened? We'll put him near the tree, and no one will think that anyone else was involved in the accident." So they did just that. The next day, the local newspaper reported the accident. The headline read, "Mysterious auto accident involving cyclist with two glass eyes." We need to be careful not to disregard every criticism that people give us. You know what? Some people are just mean and nasty and just are critical of everything. Sure. And, you know, sometimes we just brush it off because, yeah, they just got a burr in their bonnet, you know, and they're just mean and, you know, we're just not going to pay attention to it, you know. But when I start hearing the same thing from other people, various people, I ought to pay attention to it. I need to pay attention to it as much as I don't want to. I don't like to listen to criticism because that means that I'm agreeing with you that I'm not as good as I think I am. That's why I don't like to listen to criticism. I'm very, you know, self-conscious, and I want everybody to think that I'm awesome and wonderful and the best guy that ever walked this planet. And when somebody criticizes me, then if I just brush them off and say, "Well, who are you? You don't know nothing," you know. Well, then I can still feel like I'm still Mr. Hotshot. But when I agree with them, well, then I might cut myself. Well, you know what? Well, be careful, because we're not always all that we think that we are. And sometimes people share stuff with us, with me, that's meant for my good. And I just get all upset and brush them off. Well, I've got to be careful. It's what happened to the nation of Israel. The same phrase, stiffening their neck, in Jeremiah 19:15, it says, "Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, Behold, I will bring upon this city and upon all her towns all the evil that I have pronounced against it, because they have hardened their necks, that they might not hear my words." See, over and over, God warned the nation about the trouble that they were in, the problems that they had. And they just didn't want to have anything to do with it. And so Jeremiah was right at the end where the tough thing hit, where the destruction came. So he that being often reproved hardeneth his neck shall suddenly be destroyed, and that without remedy. Verse 2. When the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice. But when the wicked beareth rule, the people mourn. Another translation, when good people run things, everyone's glad. But when the ruler is bad or evil, everyone groans. Amen. Verse 3. I could get political on that one. I won't. Verse 3. Whoso loveth wisdom rejoiceth his father, but he that keepeth company with harlots spendeth his substance. He spendeth his father's substance, his father's wealth. Whoso loveth wisdom rejoiceth his father, but he that keepeth company with harlots, with prostitutes, spendeth his substance. Look at Luke chapter 15. A very, very familiar story. And I want to read through it in light of this verse. Luke 15, verse 11. You know this story as the prodigal son. Okay? Keep in mind, whoso loveth wisdom rejoiceth his father. He that keepeth company with harlots spendeth his substance. Okay? Luke 15, verse 11. And Jesus said, a certain man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falleth to me. And he divided unto them his living, his inheritance. He gave the son his inheritance, verse 13, his part of the inheritance. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together, took his journey into a far country, and there wasted his substance with riotous living. Prostitutes. His brother will talk about this. He wastes his father's substance on prostitutes. And when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine. Oh, so does that that makes him a fool, doesn't it? By the way, makes him a fool. He falls wise or fool. He's in the category of the fool. And when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in that land, and he began to be in want, he began to be in need, and he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine, and he would fain have filled his belly with the husks that the swine did eat, and no man gave unto him. He was dying of hunger, wanted to eat the pig's food. He was so hungry. I mean, it's the worst diet in the world. The guy wanted to eat pig's food. And when he came to himself, and he said, how many hired servants of my father's have bread enough to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and will say unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants. And he rose and came to his father. And when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion, and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. That sounds like rejoicing the father, doesn't it? Whoso loveth wisdom rejoiceth his father. And yet he was the fool. He was the guy that just spent Pop's money on the prostitutes. But what happened? He turned around. He turned around. You don't have to stay in the category of the fool. And though I might have done the stupidest thing in the world, I don't have to live there forever. I could come home. Verse 21, and the son said unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. But the father said to his servants, bring forth the best robe and put it on him and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet and bring hither the fatted calf and kill it and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to be merry. Now his elder son was in the field. And he came and drew near to the house, and he heard music and dancing, and he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said unto him, thy brother's come, and thy father hath killed the fatted calf, because he received him safe and sound. And he was angry and would not go in. Therefore came his father out and entreated him. And answering said to his father, lo, these many years do I serve thee, neither transgressed I at any time thy commandment. Yet thou never gavest me a kid that I might make merry with my friends. You never gave me a feast. But as soon as this thy son was come, which hath devoured thy living with harlots, thou hast killed for him the fatted calf. And he said unto him, son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. And it was right that we should make merry and be glad. For this thy brother was dead and is alive again, and was lost and is found. You know what? If you've made the wrong turn, you can turn around. You can turn around, and even though you've spent your father's substance, you can rejoice the father by turning around. The other thing that some of us need to be careful of is that we aren't like the older brother. That we aren't like the older brother, because we need to let people turn around. When people realize they're in the wrong place, sometimes we get a little bent out of shape. A common thing that happens in troubled marriages, one spouse will go do some horrible, stupid, terrible thing and will ruin the marriage, and then they turn around. We don't want to be the older brother. We want to be willing to let the other person come back. Because that's God's heart. That's God's heart. That's a hard thing. I've seen it a lot in marriages where one person is really being the jerk, and then finally the other person says, that's it, I've had it. And then they finally wake up, and it's usually the guy. I have to confess, 9 out of 10 times, the guy's the stupid one. I'm sorry, that's just the way we are. Every once in a while, the girl is bad, but usually it's the guy that's the stupid one. Stop nodding so profusely. And you know what? I've seen it over and over again where the guy finally shapes up, finally gets right with God. And then the woman's upset with him because now she doesn't have a reason to be mad at him anymore. Or something like that. Gang, we want to make sure that we're open to people turning and turning around to rejoice the heart of the Father. That's a good thing. Let's go back. Verse 4. The king, by judgment or justice, establisheth the land, but he that receiveth gifts overthroweth it. Receiving gifts, as King James, it means taking a bribe. A leader who is influenced by the gifts of people, he's on dangerous ground. We could see it in the courts. You know, if a judge was accepting bribes, you're going to ruin the country because everything becomes corrupt. You know, as long as you got enough money to pay off the judge, then you're okay. That's wrong. But even as leaders, whether you're a judge or not, when you're in a leadership position, things get all topsy-turvy when we start playing favorites to the people who give us gifts, to the people who are nicest to us. Don't want to go there. Verse 5, a man that flattereth his neighbor spreadeth a net for his feet. And the word that's translated flattereth, it means to be deceitful, to be smooth, to be slippery. It's not just saying that I appreciate you. It's okay to say that to people. It's okay to say to to your dear friend, hey, you know, thank you so much, or, you know, really appreciate what you did. That's not flattery. Flattery is when there's deception mixed into it. How can you tell the difference between flattery and appreciation? Heck if I know. It kind of sounds the same, you know? But just to know that when somebody, all they ever say are the nicey, spicy things to you, watch out. You know, it's time for the sucker punch. Be careful. That's the skeptic side of me. Okay. Verse 6. In the transgression of an evil man, there is a snare, but the righteous doth sing and rejoice. I think that what this is saying is that when a person commits a sin, this, the evil man in transgressing and doing something wrong, it's a snare. He's always looking over his shoulder, wondering when he's going to get caught. Right? So when you do some bad thing and you're in some bad situation, you're always looking over your shoulder, wondering, you know, when am I going to get caught? Am I going to get caught here? You know, am I going to get caught here? Can they smell my breath? You know, can they tell what I've done? Can they tell where I've been? They're reading my mind. They walk into church. I can tell they're reading my mind, you know. And you're always wondering, you know, the paranoia comes in. But the righteous doth sing and rejoice. When you don't, when you just don't do the stupid stuff, you don't have to look over your shoulder. It's the coolest thing in the world. Carefree, nothing to worry about. You don't have to worry about getting caught, because what are you going to get caught about? I don't know, caught about being too nice or something? Okay, guilty. Verse 7. The righteous considereth the cause of the poor, but the wicked regardeth not to know it. Another translation? The good-hearted understand what it's like to be poor. The hard-hearted haven't the faintest idea. There is one way to measure your relationship with the Lord, and that's what you think of poor people. Do you feel for them? That is a measure of your relationship with the Lord. The righteous considereth the cause of the poor. You try to understand what it's like. Verse 8. Scornful men bring a city into a snare, but wise men turn away wrath. Scornful men, the word can be translated scorning, bragging, to talk arrogantly, to mock, to make fun of, to deride people. Scornful men bring a city into a snare. They trap a city. Scornful men, people who are bragging, making fun of people, cause trouble. They fan flames in groups. Whereas wise men turn away wrath. The scornful man, the braggart, is pouring gasoline on fires. The wise man pouring water on fires. What do you do when there's a fire around? You know, do you ever see that? You see people who jump right into the middle of an argument because they want to get into it. They just love arguments, you know. And I just love to get in there and, you know, come on, go ahead, put up your dukes, go ahead, you know. And the wise man puts out the fire. There shouldn't be a lot of fun in getting people upset. Verse 9. If a wise man contendeth with a foolish man, whether he rage or laugh, there is no rest. I like the New American Standard here best. It says, when a wise man has a controversy with a foolish man, the foolish man either rages or laughs, and there's no rest. You know, sometimes you get into arguments with some people, and some people just get really mad at you. Other people will laugh at you. And there's just no way around it. Verse 10. The bloodthirsty hate the upright, but the just seek his soul. Another translation, the bloodthirsty hate the honest, but the upright seek out the honest. Verse 11. A fool uttereth all his mind, but a wise man keepeth it in till afterwards. The word that's translated mind, ruach, it's the word for spirit or wind or mind. Some of the translations translate this as anger, because that's the way that's the slant that they put on it. A fool gives full vent to anger, but a wise person quietly holds it back. But I think it's a little more broader than just anger. I think it's talking, some of the translations talk about the emotions. A fool vents his emotions, but a wise man keeps a lid on it. That could be, but I like the King James. A fool uttereth all his mind. One translation says, a fool lets it all hang out. A sage quietly mulls it over. It's restraint. It's self-control over things you say, over things you feel. A seaman meets a pirate at Starbucks. Actually, the joke said it was in a bar, but I just didn't think that would be a good tell joke about a bar. So, at church, so it's at Starbucks, okay? Their talk turns to adventures on the sea. The seaman notes that the pirate has a peg leg, a hook, and an eye patch. The seaman asks, "So, how'd you end up with the peg leg?" The pirate replies, "We were at a storm at sea, and I was swept overboard into a school of sharks. Just as my men were pulling me out, a shark bit me leg off." "Wow," said the seaman. Well, what about your hook?" "Well," replied the pirate, "we were boarding an enemy ship and were battling the other sailors with swords. One of the enemy cut me hand off."
"Incredible," marked the seaman.
"And how did you get the eye patch?" "A seagull dropping fell into me eye," replied the pirate. "You lost your eye to a seagull dropping?" the sailor asked incredulously. "Well," said the pirate, "it was me first day with the hook."
If you don't learn self-control, you can hurt yourself. If you don't learn self-control, you can hurt yourself.
There are things, I think, there are some things that we talk ourselves into thinking that I can have self-control over this. I can have self-control over that. You know, but some of us think that the one thing we can't control are our emotions. And I'm one to talk. I know what it is to get depressed and sad and gloomy and all. But you know what? You have a measure of control over it. You have a measure of control over your anger. You know, when a fellow gets into a rage and thinks that he can just do whatever, or feels like he has to do whatever he thinks in while he's raging, wrong. Absolutely wrong. You can have control. The thing I always think of is, you know, how, have you ever been in an argument with a loved one, real heated argument, you know, and you're yelling at each other and you're top to top of your lungs and you're yelling and everything, and the phone rings and you're yelling and, "Hello?" Do you ever do that? Have you ever done that? Am I the only one that's ever done that? Come on, has anybody ever done this? Yeah, I probably am the only one that's done it. That's right. Good, I'm not the only one. And what does that show me? It shows me, you know what, I do have a little measure of control over it. I do.
Not when you're yelling like that.
Yeah. You're not hearing the phone. Well, that's the problem. You probably don't hear the phone. But look what a fool uttereth all his mind, but a wise man keepeth it in till afterwards. You know, sometimes it would be okay to just cork it a little bit. Just put a, you know, a little cork on it, just for a little bit. Just for a little bit. To maybe think a little bit about what I'm thinking and what I'm feeling. Verse 12. If a ruler hearken to lies, all his servants are wicked. Now, I think there are two different ways I was looking at this. One idea is, and this is what most of the most of the people were saying, if a leader encourages lies by listening to them, then the people that he leads will eventually learn how to lie all the time because that's what he listens to. That's one way of looking at it. I was thinking of another idea, and this is what I thought over the years, and it's probably wrong, but the idea, if you listen to everything that people tell you, not just lies, but good stuff, but also lies, the problem is that there's going to be people who will come up to you and lie to you about other people. And you're going to think that they are evil, wicked, mean, and nasty. And they're not. The person that's telling you that is lying. And so to me, I was thinking I could see how this could work, you know, if you listen to lies. It doesn't mean that the other person that you're hearing about is wicked, is really wicked, but they're telling you that they are. And so we need to learn to discern lies from truth. Not everything everybody tells you is the truth. My goodness, all you have to do is listen to the political campaigns, right? They can't, or gossip. But with the political campaigns, and please, please don't get political on me, they can't both be true. That when they both talk about, well, no, the sun is black. No, the sun is white. Well, they can't both be true. One of them has to be true. And we have to learn. That's a part of growing up, isn't it? Is learning that some people just don't tell the truth. And we need to learn to discern the truth. Verse 13. The poor and the deceitful man meet together. They got one thing in common. The poor man and the deceitful man, the destroying man, the destructive man, they got one thing in common. The Lord lighteneth both of their eyes. God gave life. God gave light to both men. He is the creator of all of us. Verse 14. The king that faithfully judgeth the poor, his throne shall be established forever. Now, a king, part of a king's job was, he was like the Supreme Court, the ultimate court of last appeal. And so if you have some kind of an argument with somebody, you're going to court with somebody, there's some kind of a case pending, and you really want to go to right to the top, you take the thing to the king. And so a king is somebody, that's part of a king's job, is learning to judge, to make decisions, to choose, do I go left, do I go right? Do I choose this person's idea or that person's idea? That's a part of what a king does. And some people can hire fancy lawyers. Some people, they might not be very, some people are just darn smart. Boy, they can think on their feet and they can just answer you right away. Some people, though, are smart enough to pay people who can think on their feet and answer and everything like that. And, well, boy, they'll get their case heard and they'll get things judged the way they want. The poor person can't afford that. And so the poor person stands before the king and they go, Mr. King, please have mercy on me, you know. And the king's, you know, I can't have time for this stupid thing, you know. What's this guy's problem, you know? And if a king learns to judge correctly, even with a poor person, someone who's not, maybe doesn't have the resources, isn't sharp, maybe isn't smart, maybe doesn't dress right, maybe doesn't, you know, meet your requirements of a cool person. But if a leader can learn to still judge correctly for someone who is at a different place, then he says, God's going, yeah, yeah, I'm going to establish this throne. And gang, it's not just about kings. It's about leaders. It's about making decisions. And if we would learn to look past whether a person is handsome or ugly, cute, you know, nice looking, whether they're smart, whether they smell good or smell bad, whether they're intelligent or stupid, and we learn to look past that and make judgments correctly about people, God says, yeah. Verse 15, the rod and reproof give wisdom. But a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. There's this commercial on TV for some TV show that's coming up, like Nanny 911 or something like that. Has anybody seen the commercial? It drives you nuts. Isn't it the stupidest commercial? It shows these children in families, and the kids are going, ah! And they're just going wild. The kids are just running around the house, running around in their underwear, and screaming and yelling and turning things upside down and just totally making this. And the parents look petrified, like, oh no, child, don't yell again. I shall do whatever you want. You know, that kind of a family situation. And the gist of the show is they're going to bring in Super Nanny, who's going to straighten these children up and teach the parents how to handle their children. And that's what I think about with this verse. A child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. A child left to himself. Children don't raise themselves. They aren't self-raising. They do not come out of the baby mother's tummies with a little tag saying, this child is self-raising. Press this button. You know, and the child raises. It does not happen. It does not happen. God designed humans so that babies are raised by parents. That's the way God designed us. The responsibility of how the child turns out, the greatest part of it depends on us. Yes, yes, absolutely. There are kids who are raised absolutely correct and turn out bad. I understand that. Or at least that's the way it looks. And I understand that. But gang, most of it is on us as parents. And he says, the rod and reproof are what give wisdom. Because that's what my hope is. I hope that I'm raising my boys to be wise. Not wise guys, but wise men. That's what I want. That's what I want with all my heart, that my guys would grow up being wise men. But the thing that gives them wisdom as a parent is the rod and reproof. The rod, that's the consequences. Whether it's a paddle, or whether it's a timeout, or whether it's taking TV away, or cutting off the internet. That's one of the new forms of discipline. Works real good. Just pull that plug, you know. Boy, yes, Dad, whatever you want, you know. I'm teasing. That's the rod. But it's not just the rod. It's not just about punishment. It's the reproof, which is, you're talking about it, explaining what's wrong. The rod and reproof together bring wisdom to the child. It's our responsibility. Verse 16. When the wicked are multiplied, transgression increaseth, but the righteous shall see their fall. Now, when it says they're multiplied, it could be talking like, you know, when you get lots and lots of wicked people. But the word multiplied, the Hebrew word, can also be translated, becomes great. When wicked people become great, when they rise in power, transgression increaseth, but the righteous shall see their fall. I really do have I like President Clinton. I there's things about him that I liked. There are some things that he has done that I appreciate. But a lot of our nation remembers him not for those good things. We remember him for the sins that he was involved with. Sins that I think opened the door for wickedness in our society, like not many doors have been opened. When he went through that time being so defensive about, you know, did I have sex with that woman or whatever, and then tried to explain what all that meant, you know. I remember seeing surveys of teens, of college students afterwards, using the same language.
So when the wicked are multiplied or become great, come into power, transgression increaseth, but the righteous shall see their fall. Verse 17. Correct thy son, and he shall give thee rest. Yea, he shall give delight unto thy soul. Another translation, discipline your children. You'll be glad you did. They'll turn out delightful to live with. But you know what? Sometimes the things that keep us from disciplining our kids. What? Let me ask you. What? Why is it hard to discipline our kids? What makes you reluctant to discipline your children?
In today's world, the law.
Well, let's forget about what
no,
the.
No, because I had a belt across my butt plenty of times.
Yeah, yeah.
And my wife had a switch that she pulled off a tree.
Yeah.
If a parent does that today, I was never hit with a fist in my face. I was disciplined.
Yeah.
You do that today, it's child abuse. And that's all it said.
Okay, well let's go around the spanking thing. I still believe in spanking and I paddled
discipline,
my kids.
Discipline.
Sure. Yeah, but discipline is more than taking a SWAT. There's more to it than that. Why
well,
don't
didn't
we
have internet in my bedroom when I was
No. So what? But what keeps us as parents? What makes us reluctant to do discipline with our kids, no matter what form it is? You don't want your kids to resent you. They say you're mean. You're tired. Sure, it's sure you get tired. What were you? Parents just don't understand. See, we get all that kind of stuff at different levels, different ages as they're growing up. And I remember, you know, even when they're little, you know, you just don't want to see the tears. You know, you don't want to go through that. But gang, what this verse is talking about is you need to see past that. To what you're shooting for. I don't mean shooting the children. I mean, I did not mean that. But the goal is, what are you trying to produce in your child? We saw earlier the rod and reproof bring wisdom, and the goal is that you want your child to learn self-control. You want your child to learn to do the right things, to do what's pleasing. And the problem is there's this anti-drug commercial on TV where at first you don't know what is going on. There's a husband and a wife, and they're yelling at each other. And one says, "You just don't understand," and he slams the door. Then the other one says, "Well, you know, you're not the boss of me," and they slam the door. And they go back and forth, and it turns out it's the parents are role playing, getting ready to confront a daughter about a drug problem, something like that, And the gist of the message is something like, get over it. You know what? You have to put up with that yucky, you're the mean parent. You're the bad parent. You have to put up with that to get to the discipline so that you get to the point where they start doing what's right. And you know what? Their whole attitude changes. Absolutely does. If you do it correctly. If it's not just the paddle, if it's not just the whatever you're doing to discipline them, but you talk it through, you talk through why you're doing this, that it's not that even though they're saying that you hate them, you don't. You're doing this because you love them. You're trying to help them grow up. The goal is just what it's saying. Correct thy son, he shall give thee rest. Yea, he shall give delight to your soul. One of the things I say, he'll comfort you. It is true when you do discipline correctly. That's the goal. So you got to look past all these negatives towards what we're going for. We're shooting for this goal of our children standing up on their feet, doing what's right, learning self-discipline, learning self-control. Verse 18, where there is no vision, the people perish. But he that keepeth the law, happy is he. Couple words I need to define. The word vision, it speaks of the kinds of visions. It's a word that means the kinds of visions that the prophets would get.
It's not, I know a lot of leadership books and people who talk about, you know, we've got to have vision for what we're doing. And that's a good thing, and I think that can be kind of applied to this. But this is talking about God giving a vision to somebody. You know, Daniel wakes up in the middle of the night and he sees a vision. Zacharias sees a vision of four horses. You know, John saw these visions on the island of Patmos and all. It is talking. That is the word that's being used. And it's the idea of God speaking. It's the idea of God speaking where people aren't hearing from God. It says the people perish. And the word perish means literally to be let loose, to be loosened from restraints. Not the idea of perish like going to hell. One of the translations puts it this way. When people do not accept God's divine guidance, they run wild. When people do not accept divine guidance. Now don't, this is not about, you know, the pastor becoming, okay, I shall tell you what God wants for you, you know, Paul, lick my shoes right now. Thus saith the Lord. No, that's not what we're talking about. But what it's talking about is when you and I in our lives don't want God telling us what to do. And where's the best place we're going to hear what God says? Right in here. This is where we're going to hear very clearly what God says. Whether you get a vision or not, do I want to hear what God says for my life? If not, my life's going to go nuts. It's going to go wild. He says, where there's no vision, the people perish. But he that keepeth the law, happy is he. Verse 19. A servant will not be corrected by words, for though he understand, he will not answer. Now, this is discipline. Children aren't the only ones that need discipline. Employees also need to be disciplined. How many of you, if I were to ask you, and some of you are both, how many of you are employees? How many of you are bosses? And some of you are both. How many of you are employees? Okay. How many of you are...
None of
the above. We'll do that too. Semi-retired. How many of you are bosses? Okay. And it's funny because you'll look at this in a little different light, both of you. But children aren't the only ones that need discipline. One of the translations says, it takes more than talk to keep workers in line. Mere words go in one ear and out the other. As a boss, you have to back your words up with something. Now, most bosses don't have a problem with that. They've learned over the years, you have to back up what you say. But some folks, and I've seen this where some folks are in the position of a boss, and they have to threaten their employees. And it works for a little while. Then they have to threaten them more. And it works for a little while. And they have to threaten them more. And it works for a little while. But after a while, you can only go with so many threats without following through. And what ends up happening is nobody's happy. The boss isn't happy because things aren't getting done. The employees aren't happy because it is the most negative atmosphere to work in the world. This guy's always threatening me, you know. There's a reason to follow through on discipline. It's because not everybody responds instantly by just being told. Some people do, but others don't. Verse 20. Seest thou a man that is hasty in his words? There is more hope of a fool than of him. Very similar to what we read in verse 11, where it talked about the fool uttereth all his mind. Here the same idea is don't, you know, put a cork in it. Hold that word for a few more seconds before you let it out. Because once it's out, you ain't never getting it back. And sometimes we say the most hurtful things in a flash of a moment. And boy, it kill, ruin, tear people's hearts out. And you can't get it back. Verse 21, he that delicately bringeth up his servant from a child shall have him become his son at the length. Now this one, there's two different ways of looking at this. One idea is that, and the way that King James is bringing it out, is that if you pamper your servant, he'll become more like a son to you than an employee. And maybe that's good. Maybe you want a son, but you have lost a good worker if you pamper him too much. Apparently, and some of the translation could be a little obscure. Some of the translations say a servant, a little different. A servant who is pampered from childhood will later become a rebel. So, anyway, you know, be careful about pampering your employees too much unless they are your daughter or something like that. Then they can pamper away because you're already related. Verse 22. An angry man stirreth up strife, and a furious man aboundeth in transgression. The word furious man literally means lord of wrath, is the Hebrew. The word Baal is the word for man. That's one of the Hebrew words for a lord or a master. Master of wrath. Sometimes we think it's good to be nice to angry people to appease them. And we've been talking a bit about work, about employees, employers. And sometimes we go overboard to be extra nice to the really angry person. But you know what? It's going to end up biting you. It's going to end up biting you. So if the person doesn't get a handle on their anger, they're going to cause trouble. They abound in transgression. Verse 23, a man's pride shall bring him low, but honor shall uphold the humble in spirit. God hates pride, and yet if we be humble, he will keep honor on us. Verse 24, whoso is partner with a thief hateth his own soul. He heareth cursing and bewrayeth or does not report it. Another translation, befriend an outlaw and become an enemy to yourself. When the victims cry out, you'll be included in their curses if you're a coward to their cause in court. Verse 25, the fear of man bringeth a snare, but whoso putteth his trust in the Lord shall be safe. When it says the fear of man, there's a couple of different words I found out in the Hebrew that can be used for fear. One of them is the word that we talk about, fearing the Lord, having reverence for the Lord. That's not this word. This is a word that means to be trembling, to be shivered, to be scared out of your wits. From somebody, and that's what this is talking about. If somebody scares the bejeebies out of you, you're getting into a trap because they have control over you. They have control. They can make you do things. It's not easy to trust the Lord in difficult situations, but it's the best thing. It says, whoso putteth his trust in the Lord shall be safe. The word safe means literally to be put up on high in an inaccessible place, up out of reach. We trust in the Lord. He puts you up out of reach of the troubles. Verse 26, many seek the ruler's favor, but every man's judgment cometh from the Lord. I think we could look at this in a courtroom deal. Everybody wants the judge to rule in their favor. And some people can pay enough money to get a good lawyer and get the judge to do whatever they want. But ultimately, judgment comes from God. And every man will stand before God. Verse 27, an unjust man is an abomination to the just, and he that is upright in the way is an abomination to the wicked. And another translation, good people can't stand the sight of deliberate evil. The wicked can't stand the sight of well-chosen goodness. So, there we go. We are done. It's 8:30. Let's stand. Let's pray.